Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
If you have been in the subway recently, you've definitely seen the poster for our first guest new film. It's the one with Matt Damon on it, rocking a goatee and a dirty baseball cap and this intense gaze. The costume is essential for his role as an Oklahoma American named Bill Baker in the new film Stillwater. Bill is a man without much money or family to speak of. The one thing he cares about most in the world is his daughter, Allison. But there's a problem. Allison is imprisoned in the coastal town of Marseille, France, after being found guilty of the murder of her roommate and girlfriend, an Arab French woman named Lina. Allison maintains her innocence, and her father is determined to do anything to see her walk free. After Allison receives some new information about the case, Bill decides to investigate in Marseille by himself. But there's a problem. He doesn't speak French. Enter Virginie, a beautiful French actress and a single mom. She becomes more than a translator for Bill, and he forms a special bond with her daughter, a young girl named Maya. These newfound connections don't distract Bill from his ultimate goal, freeing his daughter, whatever the cost. The movie is co-written, produced, and directed by Tom McCarthy, who you might know as the director of the Best Picture winner Spotlight. You can catch Stillwater in theaters starting this Friday, and Tom McCarthy joins me now. Hi, Tom.
Hi, Allison. Thank you.
So you started working on the script about 10 years ago, and then you ended up putting it aside. What wasn't working in that first iteration, and what made you return to it?
The first iteration was sort of a straight-up thriller, and probably my first shot at a thriller with another writer. And when I, you know, there comes a point as a writer where I sort of step back and look at it as a director, and I just felt like it lacked dimension in terms of what I'm usually searching for in movies and in the movies I want to make. And by that, I mean, it lacked a certain human and emotional dimension, probably more commonly found in straight-up thrillers. And maybe also, I think, and probably just as importantly, I didn't really have a strong point of view on it. Like, why make this movie and why now? It was an interesting story, but it just, I couldn't find my what for, in a way. And, you know, those couple of factors, it was sort of, I feel like I didn't have any choice but to put it down. And I walked away thinking, oh man, I just spent a year on that. And that's a good lesson to learn, you know, because I might not ever make it. Fortunately, I did come back to it.
That's so interesting that Tom, the director, stepped in to tell Tom, the writer.
Yeah.
This isn't really going anywhere, friend.
Yeah, yeah, it's an interesting kind of transitional period. And look, I'm constantly going back to being Tom the writer when I'm in process and starting to direct. I'm constantly tweaking. But that one was clear. I just like, man, I just don't see this movie. It was really just lacking something. And finally, maybe it was a little bit lacking in authenticity. The other writer was a British guy here in New York. And I was like, man, it doesn't ring true. So 6 or 7 years later, I had a break between movies, and I picked it up, and I thought, wow, I still like the seed of this idea. There's still something really interesting to me about this predicament, about a father visiting his daughter who's in prison in Europe, and in a sense, there's trying to reconcile his relationship with her. But I thought, you know, if I'm going to do this, maybe I'll start from scratch. And I reached out to two French writers, two guys who collaborate with a director that I really like, a guy named Jacques Audiard. I just sort of tracked them down and sent them a cold email and said, hey, I like your work, and would you take a look at a script and maybe collaborate with me? And that was Thomas Bidegain and Noé Debré.
What insights did they provide that were useful, that helped this script start to become alive to you?
Well, it was, you know, it's funny. Our first meeting was on Zoom back before Zoom was all the rage. And it was one of those very awkward meetings where they were very direct and very clinical in their analysis, but ultimately dead on. And they just sort of talked about what the script was. You know, not to get too inside baseball, but they have a sort of approach to storytelling, filmmaking specifically, where they look at stories in terms of two types, an A, which is sort of a human drama, and a B, which is genre, regardless of what the genre. So A and B. So it's not so much a grade as it is a sort of delineation. And they said, look, your movie starts as a real A, which we really, a real human drama, but then it becomes a hard B 7 pages in and never looks back. And I thought, that's exactly right. And I'm much more akin to the drama. I like genre. I like using genre as a way of telling story, but I don't just do straight genre. It's probably why I walked away from it in the first place. So, I just like the way. So I flew to Paris the following week, and we spent about 2 weeks in their office just really talking through the movie and what it could be, and really hit it off, not just as writers, but as people. And, you know, you're always looking for that in collaborators because it's a real long journey.
Tom, it's public radio. We like inside baseball and getting into the weeds. It's okay.
Of course.
My guest is Tom McCarthy. He's director, co-writer, and producer of Stillwater. I'm not giving too much away by saying that, you know, things changed politically in the United States and in Europe in the past 10 years, and that is definitely had an impact, I'm guessing, on the script based on some of the dialogue around Bill, around perhaps his political affiliation, around racism, what it looks like in the United States versus in Europe. So I'm curious for you, what changes that happened here in those 10 years found their way into this work?
Well, first of all, you're right. When I picked the script back up, it was 2016. So suddenly I felt like, okay, I have, if not a point of view, I have something that I want to sort of explore, or a character that I want to explore. Bill had already been a kind of blue-collar worker from Oklahoma. I started traveling there in 2016. I'm like, I got to go a little deeper, and I'm a little curious about the middle of the country right now. And, And so as soon as I landed there, I quickly realized, oh, Bill's not just blue collar. He's got to be a roughneck. These are sort of iconic characters in the Oklahoma landscape. These are guys that work the oil rigs. And they were just kind of everywhere. They kept coming up in conversation, and they sort of almost have a mythic reputation in Oklahoma, and just a really specific type of person. And so I sort of did a deep dive into that culture. Started interviewing roughnecks, traveling around the state, zeroing in on three or four that I thought were really capable of articulating their story and their story kind of universally. And it was just, you know, really kind of shaped the movie in a really specific way. It kind of gave me and Taman Noé a real direction in terms of the film. And you're right, at that point, you know, we were an incredibly divided country. We still are, unfortunately. And I felt like, you know, two things. One, I found it really healing to be there and spending time with these people who are incredibly generous and curious and caring. And because, you know, all we were hearing is the sort of us and them of it all in this country, and a lot of finger pointing on both sides. And I would come back to New York feeling like, okay, there's hope. If a filmmaker from New York can drop in and have a great week with a bunch of roughnecks in Oklahoma, you know, there's hope for this country in terms of us all starting to talk again. And secondly, I just felt like, yeah, we had a kind of journey for this character to go on in the discussion, as you mentioned earlier, all these topics that we could talk about. Thirdly, I'll say this, and I think it was crucial to what we were doing with this movie. You know, Taman Noé and I were all listening to podcasts sort of coincidentally in our lives. I think I was listening to S-Town. They were listening to Serial. There was another French one that I know Noé was linked in. And we were just talking about what that world, the podcast, long-form podcast culture that was kind of exploding in this country at the time and around the world, and how interesting it was, and how these stories began as one thing and then became something else and something else and something else. And we thought that was a great template for the story. We felt like, hey, let's not be kind of constrained by any particular genre, as I was earlier, but let's really allow this story to kind of embrace as much scope as it needs to be emotionally and in terms of, you know, just story and plot, what happens to this guy when he arrives. And in some way that really liberated us and gave us, you know, like I said, a really strong template to kind of implement cinematically and go for. And I think that was the final, I think, piece that really kind of unleashed us in a way and gave us permission to go where we felt the story needed to go for its ultimate impact.
Now, was it always going to take place mostly in Marseille, in France?
Yeah, it really was. And, you know, I'd say 90% of the movie does. And, you know, that was also thrilling because, you know, suddenly it became a sort of American-French creative co-production. And, you know, not just with the writing, certainly those guys, although we had similar taste, we came from cinematically different backgrounds and as writers just approached material differently. So that was just really exciting to be collaborating with two writers that good and have them pushing on me and vice versa. But then when we arrived in Marseille, we were fortunate enough to shoot there. The studio gave us, you know, permission, financial permission to do so. You know, it just was an incredible canvas for the movie. It's just a really, really interesting and dynamic and beautiful and decrepit and textured, diverse city. So it really, I think, impacts the movie. You can really feel the energy of that city in the movie. And it really impacts Bill Baker, the main character played by Matt Damon.
Yeah, the film also plays a lot on the perceptions of Americans, but also perceptions of France. Even Bill doesn't seem to understand how dangerous parts of this town are as he's sort of wandering around trying to figure out how to find this person who might be able to absolve his daughter of guilt. What did you want to explore about perceptions of France?
Yeah, I think perception is the key word for the whole movie. And in a sense, we were trying to subvert that from, you know, from the opening scenes of our perception of people, our perception of our countrymen, mm-hmm. our perception of foreign places, and so on and so forth. And I feel like that started with this idea of this iconic American hero that we've become so used to in thrillers, this sort of man on a mission with a real moral imperative about what's right and what's wrong and what he's going to get done. We felt the time of telling those stories are a bit over. The world's just a bit too complex, and America's standing in the world has changed quite a bit. So we were exploring, you know, how to sort of subvert perceptions of that and how to sort of play out the reality of what happens when a character like Bill Baker goes over and gets very sort of myopic in his pursuit of what he thinks he needs to do, what his task is, and he's going to do whatever he needs to accomplish that task. That became really interesting for us. And ultimately, we wanted to examine the consequence of that, right? So, which I think thrillers rarely do. They don't talk about consequences. Mm-hmm. They just leave, you know, bodies in the dust kind of thing. We wanted to talk about the human emotional complex to the other characters in the story and to Bill Baker himself. But, you know, as you point out, it's a very, very American story, but we had this great lens because we set most of it in France. So I think both of us, my French writers and myself, were constantly trying to talk about, you know, how we can sort of subvert those perceptions of both countries and do so in a way that it wasn't a typical, you know, fish out of water kind of story that I feel like it's another sort of genre we've seen quite a bit. So we were trying to do ways that maybe we hadn't had the discussion of ways talking about class instead of just race, you know, maybe class is a means of talking about race. Talking about gender and sexuality and even incarceration, and just have these discussions in a way that felt both intimate and emotional, not just intellectual, and maybe encompassed sort of the philosophies and ideologies of both countries where the film is set.
Yeah, we get to see sort of the clash between Super American Bill and the residents of Marseille, and part of that comes in the difference in the examination of racial dynamics in France. I want to play a clip from the film Stillwater. This is Virginie and Bill arguing. After Virginie refuses to continue to interview a bar owner who might have information about the murder that Bill's daughter is accused of committing.
Hey! What happened?
I'm sorry, I can't talk to that guy anymore. He was just saying some horrible things.
Like what?
Like he just wants to put an Arab kid in jail. You know, he doesn't care which one.
That's it?
That's it? What do you mean, that's it? He's a racist.
Okay, he's a racist. We still gotta talk to him.
No, I don't talk to him, no.
Well, he might know something.
No, he doesn't know something. Bill, we're not gonna send an innocent boy to jail.
My daughter is innocent.
What? Oh, I can't believe this conversation.
Well, then, you live in some fancy-ass world, honey, because I work with guys like that all the time.
No, but it doesn't matter, okay? It's not right.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm trying to get my little girl out of jail. That's all I give a fuck about.
And you sound very American right now.
Good. I am.
That's from the movie Stillwater, starring Matt Damon. I'm speaking with his director, co-writer, and producer, Tom McCarthy. What does that scene reveal about the worldviews that these two characters, who are fond of one another, but are clearly having a difference at this moment?
Just how complicated it is. Mm-hmm. You know, I think there's real truth in both sides of that conversation. And it's interesting, I was watching that scene really for the first time with an audience at the Cannes Film Festival where the movie premiered, primarily a French and European audience. And I was watching Virginie's reaction to the scene and just how she, you know, this bar owner is like an overt racist. He just keeps talking about the Arabs and taking over Marseille, and he likens them to Mexicans in this country. And he's a bad guy. And Bill, unfortunately, has no idea what he's saying. He doesn't speak a lick of French, and they have the conversation in French. Virginie just can't handle it anymore. She just gets off, and that leads to that confrontation. And I think, like, I was watching both characters trying to process. I mean, Virginie was literally overcome by her indignation and her inability to kind of see beyond that. And not saying she should, but in some ugly way, Bill makes fair points, you know, and some of this comes from the research that we did when we were there, that I did, talking to roughnecks. We're like, you know, they're like, hey, man, we're not rednecks. You know, we're not a bunch of racist country boys. Like, are the racist guys that we work with? Yeah, we can't avoid it. That's everywhere in the world. And like, we still have to work with them. We still have to do our job. I don't have to like them. I don't got to talk to them about it. But, you know, it just is what it is. We don't have a choice all the time. And I thought that dynamic is really interesting and kind of brutally honest, if not ugly at times. But like, the tension between them, and at this point in the story, these two have been getting along. As you said, one is a theater actress from Marseille, the other is a roughneck from Oklahoma. This is the first time the worldviews come into hard, sharp contrast and even, you know, conflict, as we hear. And she ends up walking away. But what's missing from the audio of that scene is the look on her face when Bill says, is that it? Like, she just can't believe it. She thinks he's going to say, oh, great, let's get out of here. But, like, he has a different way of dealing with things, again, because he perceives his moral imperative, getting his daughter out of jail, to be more important than everything. And that is, again, something that this movie takes, you know, really looks closely at.
My guest is Tom McCarthy. He's director, co-writer, and producer of Stillwater, starring Matt Damon. It's going to be in theaters this Friday. After the break, we'll talk about some of the film choices made and many of the relationships at the heart of the film. This is All of It. You are listening to All of It on WNYC. I'm Allison Stewart. My guest this hour is Tom McCarthy. He's director, co-writer, and producer of the new film Stillwater, starring Matt Damon, about an American dad trying to free his daughter from a prison in France. She's been accused of a murder. I want to ask you about some filmmaking choices, Tom. We'll get back to the deep heart stuff in a minute, but I want to know some filmmaking choices. So the studio says, hey, take the money, go to Marseille, make a movie. Now, it's not that easy, obviously. What was a place you wanted to shoot or a location that you really were desperate to get to that seemed like it wasn't going to be possible, and then you were able to make it happen?
There were many in this movie because we never shot on a soundstage once we got to Marseille. Every scene was shot live, and many of them are challenging scenes. There's scenes that take place in the prison there, Les Baumettes. That was one that I was like, we got to figure out a way to shoot in there. They let us. There's a scene that takes place in the Olympic Stadium there, the Stade Olympique, where the sort of home team OM play, Olympique Marseille. And we wanted to shoot a live game and a live match, and we got to do that, which was just insane. The energy, you know, 80,000 people at home cheering, and we got to shoot during that game. And then we wanted to shoot in a place called Les Calanques, which is these like incredible rock formations, this huge natural park. They're almost like fjords on the Mediterranean. And I really wanted to set a scene there, and we were fortunate enough to get that. I will say, every time we were sort of met with, we had the no, maybe, yes of the French approach. We would ask, they would say no, we'd say, are you sure? They would say maybe, but they would really need it, and they would say yes. And we just went through this process of no, maybe, yes. And it worked, and the city was incredibly cooperative. But you know, it's not always the case. And there were some real just cultural and practical barriers. We were mostly, you know, my keys were all mostly American, and then the majority of our cast and crew were French. So we're just trying to always navigate that. But again, it just goes back to why I wanted to shoot there. You know, like, it just, you can just feel that city from top to bottom. Everywhere we shot, including these, you know, what we would call the projects, they call the suburbs. And some of those we had to get, like, literally permission from not just the people who run it, but also there are certain drug dealing operations that operate out of there. We just had to sort of seek the proper permission and say, we're going to be here. We'll show this area, not this area. And they too were very cooperative.
I want to play another clip from the film. This is a scene from prison, where Allison, played by Abigail Breslin, is talking about beginning to accept the fact that she may have to finish out her prison sentence. She may finish the whole thing. Let's take a listen. This is from the film Stillwater.
I've learned something new, actually. It's helped me a lot. Something called Mektube. A nurse told me about it. It's about acceptance.
Acceptance of what?
Your fate. It's helping me to stop struggling so much. Stop questioning everything. You just embrace your fate. And learn to live in peace with it. It's a Muslim idea. It's about letting go of all of that shame and guilt that pushes you down and keeps you down and makes you feel so powerless. And that's how I felt for a really long time. Powerless and forgotten. And that makes living really hard.
That's Abigail Breslin from the film Stillwater. So, you know, for a lot of us, we have an image of Abigail Breslin. I literally have in front of me on my bulletin board a picture of her from as Olive from Little Miss Sunshine. She's like sort of one of my favorite film characters of all time. And this film, you know, she's morally ambiguous, we'll say, without giving too much away. We're not really sure where she stands. We're not really sure what's going on with her because we meet her so far down the way in her story. What conversations did you have with her as how you wanted Allison to be portrayed?
Yeah, I couldn't say enough about Abby's performance in this. In some ways, she does the heavy lifting because she's walking a lot of fine lines, and she's doing that from her prison cell for the most part until she has one day out of prison, which is a French system where they get a day out of jail, which is really interesting. For her, finding her own truth, and I will only go so deep with actors in that. Like, I want them to have their own mechanism for coping with their reality and with the other characters. Now, if I'm watching it and it feels inauthentic or doesn't feel grounded or rooted in something, I will step in and say, what are we playing here? But, like, I sort of want them to have their own secrets, and this movie is in large part about secrets. Secrets. And I also think, as the clip alludes to, like, you know, there's also a lot about sort of trauma, right? Family trauma, generational trauma, emotional trauma, and how people cope and how damaged we are in it. I read this great book in preparation. One of the things when I was sort of writing and preparing this film called Strangers in Their Own Land by an author out of Berkeley, Arlie Russell Hochschild. And it's just a terrific examination of sort of a mindset in certain rural communities in America, and talking about sort of game and guilt and shame and that sort of generational trauma and how it plays out specifically in this relationship between father and daughter. And, like, I think that is something that you see Matt carrying with him throughout the whole movie. I mean, it seeks to be a redemption movie, and I think he seeks redemption, but ultimately, I think it's more about liberation and how we liberate ourselves from our past, from our mistakes, from our baggage, from our pain and from our guilt. And that is something that felt very of the moment and very relevant to where we are right now as a country, as we try to liberate ourselves from the sticky mess that we're in. You know, it's interesting because when I talk about it, it all feels so intellectual, but the thing that really drew me to this film is just the story. Like, it's just, I think when you're watching the movie, I just keep hearing it again and again. There's just no way to predict where it's going because we're really just following these characters on this journey, you know, and there are times, as you know, it gets very sort of thrilling and there are times where we slow down. We really want to kind of engage in the human element of the story and the emotional element, which I think is essential for the ultimate impact of the film.
Yeah, it's interesting because they have this relationship, Allison and Bill Baker, this father-daughter relationship, which is fractured and is sort of broken. Yet in the film, Bill has this sort of almost idyllic, to a point, relationship with Virginie's daughter, this beautiful little girl named Maya, who I understand has never really acted in a film before. And their relationship is like, you know, and I mean this in the best way, Disney-esque. It's just so lovely and uplifting for a part of the film. I'm curious, what is it that Bill is able to connect? How is he able to connect with this young French girl who he does, they don't speak the same language, and he can't, that he isn't able to quite get to with his daughter, his biological daughter.
Well, again, I think it's baggage, right? Like, why do we go home and have so much trouble with our family and say, God, I acted like I was 14, you know, when I saw my mother this weekend, you know? It's like those things that we can't quite escape from, the shackles that we can't break. And in some cases, like this particular relationship, there's some real extreme baggage. Like, Bill left a lot of wreckage in his life. The movie starts in the wreckage of a tornado, and it's symbolic of, I think, it's the wreckage that Bill has left in his past. And you can see that played out in his daughter, Abby, and Allison, and how she's struggling. But you're right. He meets this sort of, he creates this sort of new family there, and this incredible shot at a second chance, really, and in a very unexpected and unlikely one. And he has this bond with this little girl. They don't even speak the same language, as you point out, but like, there's just an emotional bond and a trust there that sort of develops over time. And I don't think it's the kind of relationship Bill was ready to have 25 or 30 years ago with his own daughter, you know, but here he is capable of having that now. We thought we needed to create that to, again, create stakes and ultimately consequences for his actions, because, you know, as the film lays out, there's some really difficult choices made and that he makes by the end of the movie, which sort of have some tragic consequences.
Why was Matt Damon the right guy to play Bill Baker?
First of all, he's a terrific actor. I wanted to work with him for a long time, and everything I've heard about him is true. He's just a total pro and a joyful artist who shows up every day completely prepared and completely ready to kind of immerse himself in the material, and that's just incredible for a guy who's had a career that long. Secondly, Matt carries, you know, when we looked at the list, I'm like, I need an actor that is going to, not just American audiences, but global audiences are going to see on the poster and be like, that's the hero. That's the guy. That's the American iconic sort of almost cowboy that's going to go there and get it done. We wanted audiences to come in with that perception so that we could then subvert them. And I think that's what the movie does quite well, is it plays with that on some level. So, you know, when I thought about that, I need this element in an actor, my list got very short. Like two or three guys that I felt could really do this at this level. And Matt was always at the top of the list. So we said, well, let's start with Matt. I've sent him material before. We've come close a couple of times, and he really just responded to this. I just felt like he saw in it an opportunity to go somewhere with Bill Baker that he hadn't gone before.
So it was a challenge for him as well. I mean, that's kind of interesting.
I think, look, even though I wanted him, as a director and a guy who's, my job is to make sure the movie works, you know, it's still this guy is not Matt Damon. Like, Matt and Bill Baker do not have a lot in common. Mm-hmm. He had to go deep on this guy for it to work. Because to go back to our sort of podcast template, Allison, like, you only go on to all these different places in the movie, both in terms of genre and story. It goes to some pretty crazy and dark and unexpected places. If you're really rooted in the reality of this central character, Bill Baker, you have to be with him as a multidimensional man, flawed man, stumbling his way through this story. And we needed Matt to kind of carry that. So he needed to get lost. There's always that, can it work? If you knew it was going to work every time, we would all do it really well every time, right? But sometimes you reach, and sometimes you get there, sometimes you don't. I feel like, you know, that was the thing. I was like, well, let's see. He really was excited about it, and he just dove in. It started with him and I took a 4-day trip to Oklahoma together, and I'd set up a bunch of interviews and time with specific roughnecks and their families and their friends. And we just kind of got, that was like well before even pre-production, and just sort of immersed ourselves in the culture, specifically the roughneck culture of Oklahoma. And Matt did a quick study.
The name of the film is Stillwater. It will be in theaters this Friday. I've been speaking with its director, co-writer, and producer, Tom McCarthy. Tom, thanks for making time today.
I really enjoyed it. Thanks for chatting.